There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a candle, and makes it home.
Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Good morning again and welcome. My guest today, Molly Huffman, is a teacher, an encourager, and the author of The Moon is Round, a true story of extraordinary loss, grief, and the fight for faith. In her book, Molly shares how Christ's love brought her through a time of intense darkness to the light of a joyous, fulfilling life. Her unique experiences with grief and loss have shaped her love of Christ and his words and have birthed a desire in her to provide comfort and hope through scripture and story. Good morning, Molly. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Molly, I'm so excited. I love the way the Lord works, because it just so happens that I also have two blogs on my website. And one of my blogs is The Over 50 Writer. And my guest for today that released this morning happens to be Joe Massaro, who is the lady that referred you to me. So
that's wonderful.
Continuing with the story,
as I
put her information in, I always double check the links, make sure that the links are always live links. Well, one of the links she sent me was to her YouTube channel. Well, as soon as I clicked on that, of course, I saw your book, and I said, oh, she must have done an interview with Molly. So I sat up last night. It was well after 12:30 when I finished listening to that interview, and I said, oh, wow, how cool is that? So I will definitely put that on where I put links for this show, too, because I thought it was amazing. And our interview is going to be a little different, I think, but still, I just so enjoyed listening to you, and I feel like I know you already, so that was just really cool.
That is cool. That's really cool.
Molly, in your book, The Moon is Round, you take us through a journey in your life where you experienced terrible tragedies, hardships, and it just seemed like they came in waves one after another for you. But then toward the end of the book, there's a lot of God's goodness and love. And throughout the book, you express where God's love stepped in and helped you through all of this. So I'd like to give listeners an overview of the book by addressing some of the points that stood out most for me as I read it. You started out when your mom passed away. Tell us what happened with that.
Yes, life was going really well, just as I had planned. I had graduated from college, got married, started a job as an elementary teacher. One day, our family got a phone call that my mom, a cancer that she'd had previously, had returned. It was melanoma, and it was already stage 3. You know, it didn't look good. There just wasn't a lot of hope. My mom was my best friend and my biggest encourager and just the person that I went to for advice all the time. And I just remember thinking, like, Lord, how could you possibly take her? She's such a pillar of our community. She's certainly a pillar of our family. I can't possibly do life without her. And so, you know, our family is very faithful family. We've been to church, and my parents were on staff with a Christian organization for a long time. And, you know, I just thought, we'll pray, God will heal her. But instead, healing on this side of heaven, she was gone about 4 months later. With that, I really had the first opportunity in my life to look at what I believed to be true about God. Is he still good? Does he still love us, even if he allows people that we love most to die? And can he still be trusted? And, you know, over the next couple of years, particularly, I went on a journey of that and started kind of diving into scripture some myself for the first time, one of the things that I saw, I was supposed to read a particular passage one day, and it was when Jesus was on the cross. You know, and it's something that I had read so many times before, but it said there that Jesus was on the cross, and it listed Mary and, you know, these other people who were there, Jesus. And I noticed for the first time that Joseph, his father, wasn't listed. And, you know, it made me think he must have died somewhere between Jesus being 13 and 33. We're told that God understands our pain, that he's gone through all the sufferings that we've gone through. And then I realized he had lost his earthly father, you know, this man who was teaching him carpentry. And I'm sure they had inside jokes. We know that Joseph was a man of very high character. And so I would imagine Jesus loved him. And yet here he was having to live without his earthly father. And I thought, okay, Lord, if you know what this pain feels like, and you say that you love me, and I trust that you do, then I'm going to have to trust you with this part of my life too.
Wow, that's really powerful, Molly. Thank you for sharing that. And that's true, that we don't see a whole lot of specifics about Joseph and Jesus' relationship, but obviously Joseph has passed away and is out of the picture somewhere, like you said, between the time when Jesus was found in the temple and the time when he began his ministry. So yeah, that's a very good point. Well, you and your family, of course, you all grieved deeply, but you had a younger sister. I believe you had three sisters, wasn't it? Two or three?
Yes, three younger sisters.
Right. And your younger sister, Ellie, began showing signs of rebellious behavior, and you were pretty well put out with her, I'm sure. What did you come to realize about her when you started working through things with her?
So she was 16 when our mom passed away. I was 24. And her behavior was, one weekend I was supposed to watch her while my dad was traveling. And another sister who was home with her was saying how she just, you know, wasn't listening and wasn't doing what she was supposed to. She was thinking she was going to sneak out and go do all these things. And can I come over? So I went over there, and they're both just fuming. They're both just so mad at each other. And our sister Mary Lou was like, you know, why aren't you obeying? Why aren't you, you know, just do the right thing? And ultimately they ended up just screaming at each other and getting physical with each other. And I jokingly, you know, was thinking, like, I feel like we're on the Jerry Springer show. Like, I did not know that people really do behave this way in real life. I thought that was all acting. You know, this is not who we are. What is happening? And so finally, Ellie, through tears, was able, you know, to say how she was the one who had to be home while our mom was dying. You know, she was the one who had to come home from school and sit there with her every evening as she watched our mom, you know, wasting away. And she had to, you know, hold the bowl while my mom got sick. And, you know, and it just dawned on me that she was so much younger than me, even just 8 years, but it made a difference with where we were in life. And so her rebellion was really her sadness, her deep, deep sadness and loss, you know, much like a boat without an anchor. And it really helped me to have compassion for her and now for other people, because really our erratic behaviors like that, whether it's our behavior or as people whom we love, there's always something under the surface. And it's usually a loss, a sadness. So once we were able to talk about that with Ellie and tell her, like, I'm so sorry, I did not know you felt like you were carrying all of that by yourself back then. And it's not fair. Like, you shouldn't have to be the only one here watching our mom die. You know, like, I wish we could have been here more and lifted some of the burden. And really after that, she was so much better. She just needed to be heard and understood. And it really was just such a profound lesson for me when we're dealing with people who are going through grief.
Yes. Well, when you think back, Molly, you said you were 24 when your mom passed, and you were already out of the home and married. So you more or less had someone else in your life to kind of lean on. And yet you had such a strong tie with your mom, and you can imagine how Ellie's tie was her still being in the home. So, wow, yeah, I'm sure there was a lot of emotion there, and I'm glad that you all were able to work that out.
It really helped me to understand her.
Molly, I love some of the unique phrases that you use throughout the book, and one that really struck me was, grief does weird things to us. What did that phrase mean to you at the time that you wrote it and you were thinking it?
Yes. Well, the example with Ellie is perfect, you know, in that we become people. We maybe behave in ways that we have never behaved before. And so, you know, for Ellie, it was this erratic, these outbursts. But for myself, too, I discovered, you know, grief made me want to sleep more for a period of time. Grief made me want to be home more. I am an extrovert. I need people time every day. But grief made me want to stay home because I didn't feel like I could trust my own emotions out in public, you know, and I also just didn't have the energy to be around people. I had this new perspective of what was important. Going shopping with girlfriends seemed so dumb when all I really wanted was my mom. Especially if we're dealing with grief for the first time, I think it can be shocking to see how we respond sometimes to grief. But, you know, as we continue to experience loss in life, hopefully it gives us some grace with ourselves, that it really does do weird things to us. And so if we are grieving a loss, we may act in ways that we don't normally act. For me, one of the really helpful things was to see a counselor and to just be able to talk through all of these new feelings that I was having and therefore some of the behaviors, and just to realize it's okay. This is normal for grief, and it really is okay.
I understand what you're saying, Molly. I lost my husband back here about 5 years ago, and I can remember at the time, anytime anyone would just make any of my friends would make a comment about their husband that was in any way negative, like, oh, I wish he would fix that door or something, I would just feel this anger, like, how dare you say anything about him? He's still alive. He's still here, and you should be grateful, you know? I mean, it was just a hyper-sensitive reaction.
It is so true. It's so true.
Molly, tell us, who was Blueberry? And I know this is going to be very hard for you, probably, as most of the rest of the show is going to be hard. But
that's okay. I'm used to telling the story. A couple years after my mom died, my husband and I started trying for a family. And so, you know, we got pregnant and we were so excited about, you know, this new life. And then on my mom's birthday of all days, I was 7 or 8 weeks pregnant and started having a miscarriage. And it was just so devastating because it felt like this baby was going to be some of the hope after losing my mom. And pregnancy, the moment you know you're pregnant, you know, calculate a due date and maybe even think about, you know, okay, what year will they graduate from high school? And, oh, we're going to have a baby at Christmas. Won't that be fun? And, you know, you start making plans for this child. And so we lost Blueberry. You know, we called he or she that because, you know, he or she was the size of a blueberry at that point. But, you know, it was another just like, Lord, why can't I, you know, have this baby? And my mom had two miscarriages, one before me and one after me. And so I just, again, was longing for her comfort, you know, during that time.
Sure.
And so it was a difficult season for sure, but it wasn't meant to be, I guess.
Yeah, and you're going to meet that little one in heaven someday, Molly.
That's right.
Well, then time went by and you had a beautiful baby boy who you named Tage, but you learned some very difficult news. And I know this entails quite a bit of what happened in your life, Molly, if you would share that with us.
Yes. So Tage was born in March of 2014, and he was full term and healthy, and you know, I just really thought, okay, this is it. You know, this is what I've always wanted, because I've always wanted to be a mother. And I, you know, took a maternity leave for the remainder of the year and was just going to be home with Tage. Things were going really well until around his fourth or fifth month. I started to realize that, you know, he wasn't smiling and he wasn't making sounds. We went to a doctor and she's like, oh, you're just probably being a nervous, you know, new mom. It's all right. You know, but my instinct, like I just knew something was off. And I remember, you know, reading at that time about baby Moses, you know, being sent away by his mother for his protection and just how she had to release this baby. And I felt like the Lord was like, you can do this. You can trust me with this baby. And so I, you know, got some courage, some hope back for a little while. And then at 6 months, there was still just something going wrong, I could tell. And so we went to a different doctor, and immediately this doctor labeled Tage as failure to thrive and sent him over for blood work. And we went to the local children's hospital, and, you know, I didn't know what it was going to be. And while we were at the hospital, they admitted us, which was shocking. I didn't realize just how bad it was. You know, a couple of days later, after a bunch of tests, they tell us that Tage has this really rare genetic disease called Lay's disease, and that it is terminal, and that there are no records of babies living past 1 year with this disease. It was like a movie. I mean, the room spun, and I remember just thinking, this moment has changed my life forever right now. What was really a gift is that our main doctor there was a Christian, and he, you know, could offer some hope, you know, along with the news. You know, he offered to pray with us.
Right.
That was really, really neat. But still, we had to then deal with this. And so again, I remember being in the hospital shower, you know, with my hands pressed against the sides, just crying, like, Lord, not my baby too. How can this be your plan? But I have learned from losing my mom that I did still believe God loved me and that God never wastes our pain. I'd seen how, because of losing my mom, I was a more compassionate person. I had different priorities, more godly priorities, I would say. And I was able to speak into other people's pain and point them to God. And so I started writing a blog during that time because I thought specifically of my coworkers who didn't yet know Christ, that I wanted to use this opportunity to continue to point them to him. And so that's when I started writing. And a week later, we took Tage home with a G-tube. And so now I had a son who had special needs, and he was also dying. So we went home, and you know, my husband went back to work. So I was home a lot with Tage, and there were some really, really dark moments where I could feel the darkness creeping in, that God couldn't be trusted, and just the panic and the anxiety of what was to come. And then I'd read in scripture, and people would pray with me, and peace would return. And I really started to sense the Lord really present in those weeks. And so we had Tage with us for about 6 more weeks, and then he passed away in my arms. And it really was a pain like I had never known. And at the same time, I 100% experienced Jesus' presence in all of those moments. I knew that we weren't doing it alone, and I did trust that the Lord was going to use it, even as I handed over my son to him.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us, Molly. I know that that's got to be such a difficult experience to have gone through. And, you know, about the time I was reading your book, which has been several weeks ago, I happened to read my devotional one morning, and I can't even remember the subject, but I do recall that the person who wrote that devotional said, there is a name for a person who loses parents. You're an orphan.
there is a name for a person who loses their spouse. You're a widow or a widower, but there is no name for a person who loses a child.
Yes. Perhaps we don't want to name it. Maybe we don't want it to be something that can actually happen. But it is interesting that there's no name, because just as losing your parents or losing a spouse, it is such a profound loss that changes you. And, you know, I will never be the same person that I was before losing Tage. But I can now say, too, that I wouldn't want to go back to being that person either. But yes, I wish there was a name. I wish there was a name for it.
Well, I think part of it, too, Molly, is that it's a reverse order of things. I mean, yes, you lost your mom young at the age of 24, but you anticipate in your life that you are going to lose your parents somewhere along your life path.
Right.
You anticipate when you get money, you know, sit and think, oh, gee, I wonder what day my husband's going to die. But, I mean, you do realize that one day one of you is going to pass before the other. But
right.
A child, your children are supposed to be burying you, you know. And
right.
It's just a complete turnaround of the natural order of things. And I think that's part of what makes it so much more of a heartache. I don't know. I can't speak to it. I haven't lost a child. But I just have always thought that it's just kind of it just kind of goes against nature. So,
it does.
Yeah.
It does.
Yes, and again, Molly, I know that was a gut-wrenching experience for you, and I know it's time has gone by, but still, every time you talk about it, I know it's got to be extremely painful. So thank you so much for sharing with us. So as I was reading your book, I kept thinking, things have got to get better. Things have got to get better. And I even wrote to Joe, and I said, you know, I'm reading this book, and I'm so into it, but it's taking me forever, and I can't understand why it's taking me so long. Then I thought, it's because I'm feeling so much pain for this poor lady, and it's like, please let something good happen to her. But as we progress with our story, first of all, we're going to take a short break, and this is where I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. My guest today is Molly Huffman, and Molly has written an amazing book called The Moon is Round, A True Story of Extraordinary Loss, Grief, and the Fight for Faith. Molly talks about basically her life experiences, and as listeners know, I ask my guests at some point throughout the show if they've ever experienced a time when they were in darkness and found their way back to light. Well, Molly's whole story is that way, so I don't need to ask her that question today. But if you would like to listen to this show again, or hopefully refer it to friends and family, you can go to my website, which is Patty Sheen, that's spelled PattySheene.com. You'll find a Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page. Click on that. You'll find a link to all the shows we have recorded to date. And under each show is a more information tab where you will find website and social media information for each of our guests. So with that, let's get back to Molly's story here. And like I said, you had lost Tage. And then next, you and your husband went into genetic counseling. And you, like you said earlier in the show, your life's dream was to be a mom.
Yes. So we met with a genetic counselor, and she told us that there was a likelihood that, you know, if we had another biological child together, that there was a chance, that about a 25% chance, that any of our biological children would have this disease. So being that my life dream was to be a mom, and if I was honest at the time, it would have been a biological mother, you know, I it was worth it to me to try again, because, okay, 25% chance that we would, but 75% chance that we wouldn't. But my husband did not feel that way. And so, you know, I was left with just having to surrender that dream. You know, we waited some more months. We waited really the entire year after Tage died, you know, and I thought, okay, Lord, maybe you'll change his mind. You know, maybe you'll give him peace about this. And he just didn't. Even the idea of adopting, he didn't wasn't feeling like that was what he wanted to do. And so I remember sitting in my house one day just weeping because, you know, I had lost two children at this point, and now the chance to have any more children. And I thought, again, Lord, why are you doing this? You know, you tell us that you're not cruel, but this feels really cruel when all I want is to be a mother. And it took me multiple days of this conversation with God until I finally, after reading scripture, I felt him say, you really can trust me. You really can. So in my mind, I thought, okay, either he's still going to change my husband or he'll take away this desire in me. And so I just opened my hands. I said, okay, I trust you. And it's crazy because the moment that I really, truly surrendered it, peace came to me. I thought, okay, Lord, I don't know what's next, but here we go.
There was a point during all of this, Molly, and again, I love some of your phrases, and this one really struck my heart, when you said that Jesus came over for coffee.
Yes. So I had, you know, this whole year of maternity leave that I had already taken. And so Tage passed away in November, and, you know, coming right into the darkest months of the year where I lived, and, you know, the holidays were difficult. And then after the holidays, I had this, you know, January, February, March period that was dark and gray and wet. And I just really was fighting some depression during that time. But I made it a point, because I didn't know how else to spend my days and I didn't want to be out in public, I decided to read through the Bible during that time. And I'd never read through the whole Bible before, but I had all this time. As I was reading through the Bible, I would read a part and then want to talk. And so many times I felt as if, you know, I'd get my coffee in the morning and I'd go to this, you know, particular cozy spot in our home, and I'd open my Bible and drink my coffee. And I just had this vision of Jesus sitting in the couch across from me, drinking coffee. It was just this really intimate, Molly, I know this is really hard for you, and I'm coming over like your friends would do, you know, like other people who love you would do. And I'm just going to sit here and let's drink coffee, and you tell me all the things you're feeling. And so I just started pouring out all of my thoughts and my fears to God and picturing Jesus sitting there, and often with tears coming down my face. And I really sensed that tears were coming down his face too, because it is that hard. It was that sad. And this was not the way that he designed life. You know, death was not part of it. And so the more I started talking to Jesus that way, the stronger my faith came, because I think for so long I had been praying, you know, maybe how I've been taught to pray. Even I love the acrostic acts, you know, adoration, confession, thanksgiving, and supplication. And that's a great way to, you know, think through what we can pray for. But nowhere in that acrostic was my lament and my grief. And so I started, you know, just speaking so honestly about my feelings and my doubts. And God, I don't know if I can trust you right now, you know. And when I started praying like that, when I started talking to God as if Jesus was sitting there having coffee with me, something changed in me. Our relationship was deeper. It was more authentic, which I think ultimately is what he really wants from us, is that deep, authentic relationship where we then learn to trust him too.
That's beautiful, Molly. Thank you so much. Oh my goodness. I've heard other couples talk about, or other people talk about, the differences between themselves and their husbands in certain situations. How do you think your husband handled his grief over Tage differently than you did? How was your relationship at that time?
Well, I am very relational, and so I wanted to talk about my grief with people. I wanted to, you know, see counselors. I wanted to get it all out there and be with people. My husband's method of grief was to pour himself into work and focus on that. You know, and someone once told me that grief, losing someone, you know, it doesn't necessarily create new problems, but it shines a spotlight on what is already in a marriage. And so I can see now that, you know, our marriage, we were living two parallel lives, and we really had different goals. You know, he went back to work and we really didn't, you know, I was home all day in the Word and really growing in my faith. And he was at work and going out with friends after work and, you know, just doing other things with his time. And so when we got to the 1 year mark of losing Paige, you know, I could tell leading up to that, that we were drifting. And we even went on a marriage retreat for couples who lost a child, which was so powerful. And we promised, you know, to continue, you know, working at our marriage. And I believed us. But at the 1 year mark, after, you know, just really sensing some distance from him, he told me that he needed to let me go. And it came as a complete shock because I really did think that we were going to work on our marriage. I didn't, you know, divorce was never an option for us. You know, we said, so I said, let's go to counseling. You know, I'd been going, but, you know, let's go together. And so we went twice. And on the second time, he just walked out and he was like, I'm done. I don't love you. I'm out. I was just so confused. And I remember driving home from that counseling appointment, you know, and now I knew how to talk to God as if he was my friend, you know, and I was like, yes. What are you doing, Lord? Like, this is not, what is happening? And the counselor, after he walked out, she said, you know, do you think he's having an affair? And I was like, no, I don't, you know. And she said, well, some of the, you know, the things that he said and the way he dodged some questions, you know, from my experience, it's possible. So you might just, you know, be on the lookout. So I, you know, I couldn't believe that. So I waited for, you know, about 6 weeks, prayed that he would come back to the house and he wasn't. And I love how tender the Lord is with us because, you know, he knew what I could handle and when. And he knew that I was in a fragile place, I think, you know. And so it wasn't until I finally asked the Lord, I was like, okay, something is off. I'm ready. Like, show me what I am not seeing. And I just felt impressed to go look at his computer. And long story short, I found evidence up there without even having to look that hard that he was currently having multiple affairs and had been having affairs for at least the last 5 years of our marriage. And, you know, I just remember my heart racing and just, I could not believe what I was seeing. And at the same time, it did make a little bit of sense as to why our marriage could never be as intimate as I had always hoped my marriage would be, you know?
Sure.
And so again, I waited and prayed that he'd come confess. You know, I gave him plenty of opportunity to tell the truth, and ultimately he didn't. So I confronted him with what I'd found, and he wanted to continue to choose the path that he was going, and he filed for divorce. And so again, I just, at this point, I remember chuckling just briefly because I thought, are you kidding me, Lord? Like, this too? Like, this is really... this has really become a lot.
Definitely.
And that's not to say that it was easy. You know, I then went through a whole lot of counseling as we walked through that divorce process. But again, the Lord walked with me every step of the way. And then later that year, we were officially divorced.
Well, Molly, of course, I had read the book, so I knew all this. But still, it's still hard to hear it. Again, even now, when what you went through. So then to add to all of this, you had some very close friends, you thought,
and things got really weird with them. What happened there, and what would you advise other people that may be in a similar situation?
So I now have, you know, hindsight, of course. So throughout the book, these people, this couple is very prominent. Both of them helped me a lot after my mom died. They were there, you know, when I miscarried. They were there when Tage was born. They were there when Tage died. They were very much like parental figures for me, and they were from our church. Just seemed like really wise people, and we would vacation with them, and they had a really fancy lifestyle, and so it was kind of a fun distraction to go do all these fancy, fun things, you know, amidst all that grief. But I could tell, you know, after Tage got sick, I started to realize how intertwined our lives were in an unhealthy way, where we would, you know, ask them their advice for things rather than my husband and I just deciding what's best for our family. And so as I started to kind of become a little more mama bear about Tage, you know, before his illness even, but just like, you know, I'm going to make my own decisions. Like, this is my son, you know, and they started to not like that a whole lot. And so now I can see that, you know, there was some real codependency there, some narcissistic behavior. And I was going along with it because I wanted to be mothered. I wanted, you know, these fancy, fun things that we were doing. We went to them the night that my husband told me he needed to let me go. We went to their house for help, because they stood with us on our wedding day and, you know, promised to help encourage us in our marriage. And they were our marriage mentors for the first, you know, year of our marriage. And then it became a friendship. And so we went to them. And I remember just being so blindsided because they said, divorce is not the worst thing. You know, yes, God hates divorce, but God hates a lot of other things too. And suddenly, like, all this panic and anxiety swirled up in me. And I remember thinking, I'm not safe here anymore. I don't know what conversations they all have had without me, but this is no longer the four of us. And they either know some things or, you know, I don't know. I don't know what it was. But I remember feeling like, I need to get out of here as fast as I can. So that was the first huge, huge red flag. So then my husband, the night he leaves, you know, goes to their house, and he's going to sleep at their house. And he ends up staying there for the next 6 weeks. And I, you know, I called the next day and I was like, send him home. You know, why are you harboring him over there?
Yeah.
And I was just met with this like, oh, honey, we just want to be a safe place for him to land. And I'm thinking, land from what? Like, he's the one that just dropped the bomb, you know, and they wouldn't tell me anything about what he was doing, or, you know, it was very, very strange. So many red flags. Ultimately, that was the end of the friendship. I still don't know. You know, I have all these theories, but I don't know what exactly the truth is that happened. At one point, the woman told everyone else in our Bible study that I had hacked into their computer system and I couldn't be trusted because I saw some emails from them to my ex-husband when I was on my computer, you know, in my own home. But they thought I had somehow hacked into their technology. And so she just kind of tried to drive everyone away from me and stay the person in power, the person, you know, in control. And it was so hard, you know, to not defend myself. But my really great counselor at the time was like, Molly, just let that go. The people who know you and know your character, they will come ask you what happened, because it will seem weird to them and they'll want to know. And so sure enough, you know, a few of them were, you know, asked to meet and hear my side of the story. And, you know, the whole Bible study fell apart. It was so, so bizarre. And so I still don't know what all that was about. And they have moved on to a different church. And, you know, I have some theories, but they're not helpful. But I would just say, you know, we have to be careful even in the church, because we're all human, first of all. You know, we all have the capability to become prideful, to need power, to need control. And, you know, I know some of their childhood wounds, and I can see how maybe those wounds would lead to these types of behaviors as an adult. But ultimately, what the Lord told me was, Molly, as much as you didn't want to let that relationship, I pulled you out. I rescued you from it because it was going downhill fast. That was not my best for you. Now I am so grateful that he just let that whole thing crash and burn so that I could fully walk away from that relationship. And so I would encourage people, you know, we need to be leaders who are not in codependence with the people that we're leading. We need to let the people make their own decisions. And if we are being led by people who don't let us make our own decisions and who resist any boundaries that we may make, that is a red flag. That is not someone who needs to be in church leadership, in my opinion.
Molly, thank you for sharing so much of the insight that you learned about that experience. I'm so sorry you had to go through such betrayal and such hurt, but it sounds like you have learned so much. And I thank you for sharing all that with our listeners today. You've been so transparent with what happened. And I'm sure that there are others out there who will benefit from hearing what you had to say this morning. So let's get to the good part here. Tell us about your relationship with Guy. I know you had some fears when you first met him about a lot of things. So share with us what happened there.
Yes. So after being single for a little while again, a friend of mine asked if I was ready to date. And I was about to go on one date. I was about to go on my very first date. But I wasn't, you know, really trusting of people very much and stuff. And so she says, I'd love to introduce you to this person. And he lives in Kentucky, which is, I lived in Indiana at the time, you know, so I thought, no, I'm not moving. And he is divorced. And I was like, nope, that's not for me, which isn't very fair because I was divorced. And he has two daughters. And I was like, nope. And so she's like, and he is my high school boyfriend. And I was like, what? You know, it was so crazy. And, but I realized that meant, you know, she knew him very well and she knew me very well. And, so if I'm honest about it, I was planning to let him introduce himself, but I wasn't going to let it go very far at all.
You wasn't having it.
Exactly. No. Well, and it's crazy how God works because we think we know what we want. You know, I thought I knew the type of person I wanted to marry, and that didn't work out, you know. And so then I meet Guy, and he is, you know, just so loving and so loyal and has these deep friendships and had this crazy-eyed dog named Lincoln that he just loved, and he was talking about doing his daughter's ballet buns for their ballet class, and I was like, who is this dreamboat? So we kept talking, and now I am here in Kentucky, and we're married, and we have two little boys.
Yes, and when I contacted you about doing the interview after reading your book, and you said, can you give me a couple of months because I'm in new mom mode? I was so excited for you. I thought, oh, wow.
Thank you. Yes, our youngest is 4 months old. So, you know, if you're going to pray for me, pray for some sleep.
What a blessing, though, Molly. I mean, your whole life was just completely turned around. It is just so amazing what God can do in our lives.
It really is. Well, and you know, when I went to the genetic counselor with my ex-husband, she made this side comment that was, between the two of you, you know, you have this likelihood of having a child with another disease, but if you were to ever be with anybody else, it's back to the chances of 1 in 70,000. And at the time, I was so angry because I was like, how could you even throw that comment out there to us in the midst of this grief? Like, that's not helpful. And then now I see that that was planting this little seed that, you know, I didn't have to be afraid going in, you know, to this marriage with Guy as far as having children was concerned. And truly, they, both of these boys are just such a gift.
Oh, that is so wonderful. How old is your oldest boy?
He is 3.
Okay, so you have a 3-year-old and a 4-month-old. Oh, my goodness. And Guy's children as well in the family.
Yes, he has 2 daughters. So we have 2 daughters. And so they are 15 and 12.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Oh, that just sounds so neat, Molly. What a wonderful ending to a sad story.
Yes, I know. It really is, you know, and I do like to tell people, you know, the happily ever after isn't promised us this side of heaven. You know, I still have days where life is really hard, you know, just the weight of life and or little moments of doubt, you know, or, you know, this is not yet the happily ever after. And I'm so grateful, though, because I can now see all the gifts that God has given me without making them the ultimate, you know, the idol in my life of having to be married, of having to have children. Truly, Jesus is the treasure, and everything else is just a gift we get to enjoy.
Yes, absolutely. Molly, you do wrap up your book with the story of tragedy and triumph in your life by answering the question, what does it mean to be a Christian? Share with us what you learned about that.
Well, to be a Christian means to be a follower of Christ. And so what he tells us is that if we're going to follow him, there will be suffering, there will be hardship, because that's how he refines us. That's how he makes us more like him. And, you know, before I didn't want to hear that. You know, we want the prosperity gospel. We want the American dream. And really, you know, kind of like what I just said, I discovered that I really had these idols in my life that the Lord so kindly said, if I wanted to follow him, he was going to have to remove these idols from their position in my life, you know, so that he could be the ultimate thing, person in my life. And so for me, for those of us who follow Jesus, I think the position that most rings true for me is just surrender and a humility of, you know, Lord, I trust you. I trust you with my life, and I know that you love me. I know that you don't let anything pass through your hands that you are not going to use for good and for molding me into more of who you are and who you've made me to be. And the grace in all of this for me is, Patty, I would have never chosen this path. You know, I would have never picked it. I would have never wanted to lose people. But I am so thankful for the work that it did in my heart and the ways that I know Jesus now that I didn't know before that pain. And so I would just encourage any listeners who are going through a period of suffering, you know, and you think, this isn't fair, this is not what I signed up for. And yet it is what Jesus promises. If we want to grow, there's going to be suffering, and there will be purpose in that pain if we look to him. And so I would just encourage people to dive into Scripture, soak it up like a sponge, because that is where you're going to find the truth and find the purpose. Listen to Christian music so that your spirit is being renewed. Be around Christian community who can encourage you and help you. And truly, you will be refined like gold, and you will be radiant.
Yes. Yeah, so that's wonderful advice, Molly. And if anyone can give advice on going through suffering and learning about Christ, it's you. So again, thank you so much. And very last question, Molly. I'm sure that listeners would like to know, and I think you explained in the book, but I'm not sure. I think you did, though.
why did you title your book The Moon is Round?
Yes. The book, there's a chapter of at my son's funeral, our pastor, you know, gave the sermon at his funeral, and she told the story of a girl who was dying of cancer. And after she had died, her parents looked in her journal and they kept finding where she wrote, "The moon is round, the moon is round." And they couldn't figure out for the longest time what that meant. And somewhere, you know, as they kept looking, they realized that she was talking about how the moon is round, you know, even when we only see a crescent of it. It's round on a stormy night when we can't see it at all. It is always round no matter what we see. And she was paralleling that to God and his love for us, and how she just knew, like, no matter what, the moon is round. No matter what, God loves me. No matter what I see, no matter what I'm experiencing. And that was just such a powerful truth to me in that season. And so I fashioned the book so that it's different quarters of the moon, you know, where we're seeing less and less of the moon. And then eventually we're seeing more and more, you know, and so to me, that's such a great reminder. Whenever I see a full moon now, you know, it's just like, sometimes we do get to see time. We aren't seeing all of it. We just have to trust. So that's where the title came from.
Yes. Well, thank you, Molly. Again, I can't thank you enough for this interview, for spending time with us. I know that you're a busy new mom and that you've got a lot on your plate. So I'm just amazed that someone who has been through as much as you have is comfortable being as transparent as you are about all that happened in your life. And that's, to me, that is definitely, it tells me that God gave you a specific message and he gave you the emotional and physical ability to be able to share that. So may God continue to bless you in all that you do.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been so good to talk to you.
Listeners, in closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered. Don't forget to go to pattysheene.com. That's PattySheene.com. You'll find at the top of the homepage of Blog Talk Radio tab, click on that. It will give you a link to today's show, to all of our shows that we've recorded to date. Under each one is the More Information tab. There you'll find Molly's website, social media information, and the same for all of our guests. Thank you so much for listening today. Until next time, God bless you.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a flame.